This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Making stuff is hard. Especially in the entertainment world, where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Hello, friends. This is It Was a Shit Show. I am Ian, joined as always by Clint.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
So today we're going to do things a little different and start. What?
That was a nutty professor. Hello.
That was good.
Was that nutty enough?
I got it.
Okay, thank you.
So we're going to do things a little different today and start with your overall opinions of today's film, The Nutty Professor. Have either of you actually seen this
before? I hadn't seen it before. Yeah, until you know, the homework.
Yeah, hadn't seen it. Did not know that it was a precursor movie to The Nutty Professor that we all know and love. Love's a strong word. I actually don't think I've seen that version of The Nutty Professor either. Like, I'd seen neither of them. But yeah, I'd never seen this or heard of it.
I felt like it took a weird turn. Like, it started awkwardly. I'm trying to... It went nowhere. And
it's kind of aimless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I was watching, I'm like, oh, this is just like Jerry Lewis's retelling of Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
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 That's kind of a fun idea. Like, let's take this gothic horror, you know, story and let's turn it into a comedy. And I thought that was a pretty fun idea. But, like, the character that he became, like, what a dick, man.
Yeah.
Like, That's the idea. That's the point, right?
Yeah.
But then I was reading about Jerry Lewis as a person, and I'm like, I mean, he's not too far off from who he actually was.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wasn't his, like, Hyde version just, like, it's just him?
Well, he was actually doing a kind of an impression of Dean Martin, who the two of them, they became famous together as he was the comedic talent, and Dean Martin was his straight man. And they came up in prominence and were just enormously huge, very successful. And so he's actually kind of doing a Dean Martin thing.
Okay.
Which, when you watch it, when you know that going in, it kind of makes sense.
Makes sense, yeah.
And it's because they had a huge falling out and didn't talk to each other for like 30 years or something like that. And
was the falling out after this film?
No, before.
So
in a way, he was kind of like, I'm gonna be an asshole and pretend to be like Dean Martin.
That's amazing. Yeah. He's like, oh, that son of a bitch. He did me wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
he's a womanizing piece of shit. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to be in this movie.
I'm going to make this movie and I'm gonna do it as Dean. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, my overall thoughts of this movie, if I can remember it from when we watched it 2 weeks ago.
We watched it a long time ago, didn't we?
I don't know. Because
this recording got delayed.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but wild stuff and... also just like super typical old movie shenanigans where there's just whole sections of this movie where like nothing happens.
Yeah.
There's just like weird long scenes that kind of like go, like the scene where he's transforming for the first time into the Nutty Professor is
goes on forever.
What is happening? Like it's so fucking weird.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love transformation scenes. Like one of my favorite ones is an American Werewolf in London. And like that's just fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And I was all watching this. All right, this is kind of cool. I'm like, okay, now he's a different color. Now he's a different color.
I think he was like
a third color.
Yeah. And then I think he was kind of like a werewolf at one point.
He did. Like he had like hairy hands. Like they made him look all young.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, this movie like had wacky parts, but then the rest of the movie wasn't wacky.
Yeah, for sure.
And so like it felt like there was a disconnect there.
When he's the evil self, it kind of flatlines.
Right.
Because it's not as interesting.
Right.
And
yeah, his Professor Frink character is like way more funny interesting.
Because I think the beginning is actually really fun.
Yeah.
Like the
comedy is funny.
Yeah.
He's great as a comedic. Like he's like any comedian or any actor you talk to now, like who are your like influences? 9 out of 10 of them are gonna say Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, he's
like the whole bit with like the pocket watch that like whenever he opens it was like this college fight song.
Yeah, that like a was whole band.
That was really funny.
Stupid. Well, and like the whole sequence where he's with the dean.
Oh yeah.
And like he's on the chair.
Yeah,
and
doing then Shakespeare. Puts,
but no. When he's on the chair when he first meets him.
Oh yeah.
And he
keeps
sinking into the seat, and then he puts
a little tiny book under like a his magazine. Butt. Yeah, and then suddenly he's sitting up like perfectly straight.
Yeah, all that stuff was really good, and the exercise scene was actually pretty good. But then it just kind of like went aimless, and then by the end of it, it was like he like came clean, but he didn't really need to, and he was like, there was no motivation for him to feel bad, like he didn't do something that hurt someone in a really bad way that he felt guilty
like
about
an
and wanted
hurt.
And then he was like, I gotta come clean about it. He just like
was embarrassed.
Yeah, he just suddenly just goes, well, I was that person.
That yeah, he like
end of movie.
It was almost like he couldn't like he it did that typical thing that all these movies do where he's up on a stage and he's like doing his whole Dean Martin thing and then like he's like, oh, Ivan, like, you know, his voice kept changing.
That was actually pretty cool.
It was good. But then it was like halfway through that scene, instead of like that turning into some comedy moment where he's like, oh shit, and he's trying to like go back and take more of the chemical stuff and like keep up the ruse.
Like
he
just Mrs. Doubtfire like situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of like doubt firing it and making him like continue on, it's like he just gave up and was just like, well shit, you guys. Sorry. It's me.
And why did like that's what I'm saying. It's like and he didn't have a reason to give up.
It was
like there wasn't something that he made him just go, I gotta stop doing this.
It was almost just like, you guys, listen, we got to end this movie. So he's just going to have to come clean in this scene for no reason whatsoever.
Well, and then no one learned their lesson. Because at the end, like, Stella walks away with the bottle of the tonic in her back pocket. Like,
right? That was so wild. Like, okay, the implication there was that she's like, well, I love him when he's, like, his nerdy professor form. But, like, I'm going to use this bit for in the bedroom. Like, eyebrows.
I know, right?
That was what... Yeah, that was what I got from it, was that it was like a, like, she's like, well, like, he's sweet, but, like, the other guy was like, damn, he was hunky. And that kept happening through the whole movie, where she was like, she was actually, like, pretty, like not feminist, but, like, she was pretty, like, you know, I don't like you, you're a playboy, and, like, you know, she didn't like the Dean Martin-style character doing. But then, like, she would...
Kind of, but then she was just, like, her character was just forced to be there.
Yeah, but then she also... So, in one breath, she'd just be like, how rude, you're the worst. And then she'd be like, but I can't stay away from him. And it, like, made no sense.
Yeah, right?
It was like, pick a lane.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Professor Kelp's Blue Chew chemical concoction.
Any other final thoughts before or...
I don't think I need to see this movie again.
Like
you said, there were like really funny moments that were just basically evened out by like just a lot of boring nothing happening.
Yeah. Do you have anything for Clint's closet?
Well, I don't have anything Jerry Lewis related or Dean Martin. But I figured the one thing that I do have is also kind of related to a little bit of a professor who also suffers with like duality issues, right?
Okay.
And it's my Rick Sanchez portal gun.
He's a nutty professor for sure.
Right? So if I shoot, I can shoot it on the wall and I can shoot a portal, we can just go and jump dimensions.
Damn.
Yeah, see, there you go.
That's awesome.
So I brought my Rick Sanchez portal gun.
Love it.
Cool. Well, so today let's talk.
What? Oh my God, no. What is he doing?
I lied.
Are you fucking kidding me? What's going on? You had me watch a movie for nothing? You son of a bitch. Did you make
this?
Today's episode has nothing to do with the Nutty Professor.
Oh. Fuck you.
Fuck you straight to hell.
What the shit? I live with this man. I cannot trust this man. I might have to get divorced.
I mean, there's a spare bedroom down here, right? I think I know where Ian's sleeping at, right?
I need to like start questioning things you do way more. Because I'll ask him questions. I'll be like, today I was like, oh, are we doing like follow-ups for the podcast? And he's like, no. And I was just like, oh, okay, why not? And he's just like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, okay. Boop, 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 boop. Like, didn't even think about
it. Yeah, just keep it along. Just sure, okay.
I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah, I'm here. There we go. Okay, Lisa's like, is this going to be a regular episode? I was like, yeah, it's going to be a regular episode. Don't worry. Like, I'll be home at a good enough time. And I'm sure I probably will, but like, you're making me a liar to my own wife.
Well, I'm like, the best thing about that is that he wasn't responding to your messages. And so I'm responding to you like, yep, it's a totally normal episode. Mer, 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 mer. Nutty Professor, LOL. Like, I had no fucking idea.
Right, yeah, because he duped you too.
Son of a bitch. Okay, what's this fucking switcheroo nonsense?
Well, so it occurred to me that I had never seen a Jerry Lewis film. And okay. And it's widely agreed that that is his best film. And so I was like, all right, let's watch that.
Ooh, that's his best film?
Yeah, I know, okay. Right? So, this time last year, we discussed the still as of yet unreleased Empires of the Deep.
Oh my God.
Okay.
We're doing some.
I figured, in keeping with that theme, let's discuss what may be the most famous, unreleased, sought by film buffs for decades, lost to history films of all time. The Day the Clown Cried. I want to temper our emotions here. The myth that has grown around the film, The Day the Clown Cried, is that it is a comedy. But that couldn't be any further from the truth. It is a very serious film that deals with a very sensitive subject. And you'll understand why in a minute. After researching this, I wanted to give this film, this script, the credit it deserves. Because talking about it is as if it's a comedy is kind of does an immense disservice to what was attempted. So, forewarning, this will be a bit of a heavy episode. While this movie may never be released, the script has been online for years. I'm going to summarize the entire film so we understand what the filmmakers were going for and why calling it a comedy is unjustified.
Okay, really quick, though. Does this tie into Jerry Lewis? Like, was he attached to it in any kind of way?
No.
That was just straight
up. I've never seen a Jerry Lewis film before.
He is diabolical. As a complete red herring.
Okay.
An egotistical, unhappy, past his prime clown gets fired from the circus and is arrested in Nazi Germany for drunkenly making fun of Hitler. Though not Jewish, he is thrown into a Nazi internment camp as a political prisoner. After months of wallowing in his own pity, fighting with the other prisoners, he discovers his original spark of being a clown by entertaining the Jewish children on the other side of the barbed wire fence. As the kids grow to love him and he continues to get in trouble for playing with them, the Nazis decide to exploit this gift. They order the clown to keep the kids in line as they board a train boxcar headed for Auschwitz. Once there, he's thrown into a cell for escaping prison. The Nazis order the clown to lead the children into the gas chambers. He refuses at first, but is offered a full release if he does. He agrees, but on the condition he can spend some time with the kids. He entertains them one last time, then they walk to the gas chambers. Each one goes inside, and the clown turns to leave. But one girl stops him, terrified. He takes her hand and joins her inside. The chamber door closes, fade to black. Today, let's talk The Day the Clown Cried.
Oh, that's so heavy.
Do we have to?
Yeah, damn, man. I don't know if I like this game, the switcheroo game. Okay, but I'm curious. I'm really interested to hear this story, though.
Yeah.
This is still an actual shit show, so don't worry.
Okay.
The script came to my desk, and I wasn't going to read it because there were 25 other scripts on my desk. I had turned a page somewhere in the script and just went, "Holy Jesus Christ Almighty. Holy Jesus Christ Almighty." I said, "I'm going to make that movie."
Okay, The Day the Clown Cried was written by Joan O'Brien and Charles Denton. The script circled around Hollywood in the early 60s, and with Milton Berle, Dick Van Dyke, and even Bobby Darin offered the role of the clown. Then in 1971, Belgian producer Nathan Washberger optioned the script, meaning he paid the writers to hold the script for a certain amount of time until he can secure a green light for production. And he went to the only movie star he believed who could make this film. 1971. Who do you think that would be?
71.
Give us a hint. Give us a hint.
The Nutty Professor.
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis.
Okay. Wait, you said this wasn't attached to Jerry Lewis at all. You son of... Look, he did it twice.
No, his like...
Twice. I got you twice. I lied again.
His programming for lying is just like spot on.
I'm scared.
Yes. Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
Okay. So it was a connection. But because you can't watch this movie, I figured let's just watch a Jerry Lewis movie.
I guess like I'm not following that thought process of just like that serious plot and then just being like, you know who could do this movie? Jerry Lewis. It's like what?
Yeah, right.
That doesn't make any sense.
We'll get into why I think they thought of Jerry Lewis. So Lewis was first given the script in 1965, and he said he was not ready for that. But when it came back around in 1971, he believed this was a story that needed to be told. Lied again. There are quotes.
I knew you'd lie.
Oh, my God. What the...
Clint, you will be our Jerry Lewis.
Glavin.
Yeah, so this is Jerry Lewis about playing the character and making the movie.
I knew the loneliness in him, the fear, desperation that lay deep in his soul. I knew that to play him would be no casual affair, but the greatest artistic wrench of my life.
So he sees it as very important.
This is like his Oscar moment.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like he, I don't think from his perspective, it wasn't ever an Oscar movie. It was like, he felt like this is something that needed to be told.
Right.
Like, and if he was the one that was going to have to make it happen, he was going to do it.
I had a talk with myself in the mirror. I said, understand that one morning you're feeling great about performing in this film, and then the next day you want to throw up. That's what you're going to feel for the entire film. Because reading it disgusts you, but playing it is a double disgust.
So in O'Brien and Denton's script, the clown's name is Carl Schmidt, and he's very unsympathetic about what's going on. But once Lewis decided to make the film, he rewrites the script himself, and he makes the clown more in line with himself, giving him some moments of like physical comedy. And like there's an opening scene where he's in the circus and doing kind of like Jerry Lewis bits. And then like when he's entertaining the children, he's like kind of doing Jerry Lewis bits.
Right.
And he also makes him more ambivalent to the situation. He also changes the clown's name to Helmut Dork. H-E-L-M-U-T-D-O-O-R-K.
Helmut Dork.
Which...
I mean, to be fair, that sounds pretty
I'm no German.
Sounds like a pretty German name.
Yeah, yeah, right. But I, according to Lewis, I'm not entirely sure. He says it's Helmut the Great. But it's a fun clown name. The idea behind it. But it does make it kind of seem... stupid.
It's bringing it. Yeah, that's like bringing it down.
Right.
Yeah.
So this would be Jerry Lewis's first dramatic role. He did some stuff later on, but this would be like his first time he's gonna try it out. Straight.
What were some of the dramatic roles he did later?
He played kind of like a straight man in King of Comedy, the Scorsese movie about Robert De Niro being a stand-up.
Okay. Anyway.
So. To prepare, Lewis said he lost 35 pounds in 6 weeks by eating only grapefruit.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's what I got to do.
That's too far. It's too far.
Just grapefruit, that's it?
It's the opposite of the Marvel diet.
Yeah.
Is that the Christian Bale, the machinist diet?
Probably. Yeah. Maybe.
I heard for Christian Bale, it was like he just ate one apple and one cup of coffee like a day. I'm like, I could do that.
He was so skinny in that movie.
You're like, but Christian Bale did it.
He's healthy.
Jerry Lewis did it. He lived to be 91.
He's a professor.
Yeah, he knows.
He has a PhD.
Yeah, he's done. I saw him. I'm pretty sure I've seen him in a lab somewhere figuring this out. Lewis was committed to authenticity, so much so that he hired a former gas chamber operator as his technical advisor.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
A man who spent the rest of his life asking for forgiveness.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Lewis shopped the project to multiple studios for distribution. And they all didn't want to touch it. They're like, what is this? This made Lewis even more determined to make it.
Yeah.
So, filmed in April of 1972 in Sweden. So, the beginning is in France, and then the rest of the movie is filmed in Sweden. But he did a lot of press in France and Sweden in the lead up to the production because... I mean, he was one of the biggest stars. I mean, think about height of Jim Carrey.
Right.
So there's a lot of behind the scenes footage and images of the movie. So Washerberger said he was financing the film himself with a Swedish company, Europa Films. They were the ones that wanted to make it in Sweden. Washerberger's filmography is 15 credits long on IMDb. None I've ever heard of. And only one of them has an audience rating higher than 6 out of 10. Ooh. So,
are they all just like, they're like probably all what we would consider foreign films because he was Belgian, right?
Yeah. And there's some American films, but they're all like B tier stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Lewis never saw Washerberger during production.
What, really?
So,
hey, thanks for your money, anonymous person I've never seen before.
I was going to say, was he just really good at like hiding or like really small or just like not there?
He was just dressed as an extra the whole time.
Right.
No, he was not there because 2 weeks in, production already runs into money issues. Mm-hmm. Checks for the cast and crew are already bouncing and suppliers from equipment rentals to the film processing haven't received money at all.
Wow.
So...
2 weeks in.
2 weeks in.
Wow.
So, like I said, this is actually a shit show. Lewis is just like, where the fuck is this guy?
He apparently
went to South France somewhere. Mm. And so Lewis is just like constantly trying to contact him.
Yeah.
Finally does. And Washerberger's like, oh, don't worry. The checks are in the mail. Don't worry about it.
That's never true.
But... if you wouldn't mind covering the bills for now.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
And he'll reimburse him.
Oh.
No. Ugh.
Don't do it, Jerry.
Don't do it. No.
Such a bad idea.
So when Lewis was not on set, he was writing checks with his own money.
Oh, my God.
And again, he was very rich at the time.
Yeah, with his nutty professor money.
And on the phone with... on the phone trying to raise money with other producers and trying to track down Washerberger. Mm. He spent $2 million of his own money to keep the movie going.
That's so much money.
In 70.
That's like 70. Probably like $7 million dollars now. Or like what? What
do
is
the
that
math.
Now? Hurry, someone do inflation math. Not me.
Well, okay. Now that I can get back on my iPad.
Your portal gun doesn't do that?
I know, right? Ready?
Yeah, go back to 1972 and ask somebody, quick, how much is $2 million? Right, that doesn't make any sense.
I'll be right back. All right, I'm back.
How much?
$14.7 million.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And how is Jerry, by the way?
he's doing all right. He's a little depressed.
Did you travel to meet Jerry Lewis in 1972 to ask him what the inflation would be from now?
He's a professor.
By the way,
thing he would know.
By the way, I'm from 2023. How much would this money be?
Yeah, let's figure it out.
You and me, Jeff. Why the hell would I know? Yep. I don't know what the American economy is going to be like.
I love the idea of Clint being like, hey, so I'm doing a podcast about that movie that you made that never came out. You know, the day
what?
That Christ.
What? Glavin.
What do you mean it never came out? Oh, sorry.
Oh, spoilers.
Portal ride on back.
Well, it's a spoiler.
No cars on the set.
He's like in the middle of filming it, just like, this never comes out, by the way. Bye.
Yeah. You fail horribly.
As I jump into a portal and flip him off.
Well, I mean, maybe that would have, he would have saw that because at the time he was addicted to Percodan.
Percodan?
This was in the 70s. It was Percodan.
But how many Quaaludes is that?
Yeah,
how many
Quaaludes is Percodan?
It's one Percodan.
And so he was kind of riding a little high every once in a while. And all that stress making the film put him on the verge of having a heart attack.
Jesus.
Jeez.
So actors who have spoken about making the film have differing opinions about his production. One said that Lewis took the job very seriously. He knew exactly what he wanted in each scene and didn't take it lightly. This actor was paid. Another said he was erratic and mean and was on painkillers for back pain and would act very strangely. She was not paid. Producer Jack Korshak was friends with Lewis before this movie, and then when they started it, by the end they were enemies.
I am so glad that this podcast is so easy to make because I can't afford to lose friends.
I'm going to jump through a portal.
This podcast is this podcast is very rarely a shit show. Wait, yeah. Suddenly a portal opens and a Clint comes out. And he's like, hey, you guys, by the way, this episode never comes out.
for you. You're wasting your time on this podcast in general.
In general, yeah.
Ah, damn it.
One of you dies in 3 years.
Oh.
And I won't tell you which.
Oh, God.
It's me. No. So.
That's why I came back. Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck? It wouldn't be you. It would be one of us. Oh, that's
dark.
That's dark, Clint.
Piece of shit.
Maybe I have.
And you die by my hand.
I know, right? Yeah. That's what it is.
Let's be honest. That's going to be me. Korshak, the last word between the two of them was a telegram from Lewis to the smallest man in town.
Oh my God, man, that is some petty telegram. Can we still send telegrams? Is that still a thing? Could I still send a telegram to somebody?
I doubt it.
No, yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, they'd have to have a receiver, right?
I'm sure there's some.
The smallest stop man, stop.
Wow. I'm pretty sure there's some random startup that's going to like try to get that. We need to go back.
Yeah, fucking hipsters.
You guys were all about analog?
Yeah.
Analog is where it's at.
Yeah, man. I like some analog things.
So after filming had wrapped, three things happened. First, obviously, Lewis sued Washburger for breach of contract.
Right.
Second, screenwriter Joan O'Brien claimed Lewis and Washburger never actually purchased the screenplay from her.
Oh.
Washburger paid her $5,000 to option the script. But per her agreement, she would be paid $50,000 once filming got started. This was never paid to her.
Oh, wow. My God.
And therefore, they were making the film illegally.
Oh, wow.
You guys, this is what the strike was all about, this kind of bullshit. No, not really, but that's some shenanigans
Shady shit. So according to his son, Jerry Lewis had got halfway through production before he found out that the script wasn't purchased.
Mm.
And technically he wasn't allowed to rewrite it.
Oh, that's right. Because he rewrote it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so he rewrote material that he did not own.
So O'Brien counters this, claiming in court that Lewis knew from the start. Lastly, Europa Films, distributors of Bergman Films. I don't know.
Europa Films.
Yeah, Europa Films. Claims they were still owed $600,000, and until they were paid, they would hold on to all the film stock.
Okay.
The Transporter. That's a Europa film.
Oh, so they're still around.
And Taken. Taken was Europa.
All right.
Yeah.
So at this point, things get a little vague. And Lewis's accounts of what happens next kind of changes depending on when you're talking to him. And we're not really given closure to a lot of this. He says he had only watched a rough cut of the footage once, and he went back to the U.S. and has not looked at it since. In February of 1973, Lewis appears on the Dick Cavett Show, and an audience member asks when the film would be coming out, because he did all that press for it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
The Day the Clown Cried will be I hopefully will finish cutting it the next 6 or 7 weeks. And we've been invited to the Cannes Film Festival, so I think we will open it then in May. Then it'll be released in America.
So via this, it sounds like he's going to get it done.
Right.
Right. Yeah, he wants confident. To get it done. But after that quote, the film just disappears. Now, had the film released in 1973, it might have been the first fictional film to depict concentration camps. So that's a big deal.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, because, like, let me just say that that's, like, too close. It's way too close. Like, people who were children in those camps are, like, in their 30s at this point. And they're just like, I don't want to fucking watch that
shit. They could
have
been extras on that set.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it's too close. Like, even, like, probably, when did, like, Schindler's List come out?
93.
That's, like, still too close. I mean, I know that movie's great, but, like, holy shit. Like, y'all, we need some space.
So, okay. This is what Jerry Lewis said about the film.
I thought The Day the Clown Cried would be a way to show we don't have to tremble and give up in the darkness. Helmut would teach us this lesson. It was all I wanted to establish, just a reminder.
So every few years, Lewis does speak about it. He did speak about it, but he was very guarded. In 1982, in his autobiography, Lewis said that he was still waiting on the court cases between O'Brien and Washburger to be settled.
10 years later?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the movie remains in Sweden. However,
it's just like under lock and key somewhere. Like
because they haven't been paid. Yeah,
the finished cut.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, not finished.
Oh, just
not
the
finished.
Footage.
Just the footage.
Gotcha.
So just the raw footage.
Gotcha. Okay.
However, he has in his possession, now again, this is what he says in his biography, that he has in his possession the last three scenes, which he never wants to get out until the movie is done.
Hmm.
And he still desires to finish the movie with a few reshoots.
Fortunately, though, the story is timeless. I can release it 10 years from now, and it will hold up. One way or another, I'll get it done. The picture must be seen, and if by no one else, at least by every kid in the world who's only heard that there was such a thing as the Holocaust.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, now comes the big question of respect. Is it respectful to make a film about the Holocaust? That answer has been proven to be yes, right? Like Schindler's List, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But more importantly, is it tasteful to inject humor into such a story?
Again, I think it depends on how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, from Marx Brothers to Charlie Chaplin, up to Hogan's Heroes and Mel Brooks's, the producers have always parodied Nazis,
mm-hmm.
but the Holocaust, Mel Brooks says he would never go there.
Right.
Right.
That was something that he would never do.
Yeah.
And so there's most significantly, there was Life is Beautiful in 97 about a man shielding his son from the horrors of genocide by pretending this is all a game.
That's the movie I'm thinking of, because I was like, there is a Holocaust movie that's like that has that kind of like levity and joyful moments in it.
Yes.
To try to help sort of like navigate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the movie I'm thinking of. I was going to look it up, but.
Yes. Okay. So, and that is kind of, I was watching this documentary about the Holocaust and humor, and it has all these like Jewish comedians from David Cross to Mel Brooks talking about it, Gilbert Gottfried, and talking about how they all have their certain jokes and how Sarah Silverman really pushes that boundary. But in what as she says in the documentary is like, this is important because unless we don't talk, we never talk about it, like it sits there in darkness and it just like becomes taboo. And it like,
right.
She's like, there's a dozens of genocides that have happened that we don't even talk about.
Yeah.
But through culture, we remember the Holocaust.
Hmm.
So it's a very, very interesting thing to navigate. Right. And
wait, what's that documentary called?
The Last Laugh.
The Last Laugh.
The Last Laugh.
And it is on Netflix. So, was Jerry Lewis ahead of his time? Over the years, the very taboo-ness of this movie being buried has made it a legend among film buffs. And in that time, the story has become a little twisted, where it's sort of described as a comedy. Jerry Lewis as a clown helping Nazis in Auschwitz, like, that sounds like a setup for a joke. Right.
Yeah.
Just that one sentence, like, makes it sound like, wait a minute. As if this movie is about a guy who continually helps put kids in the gas chambers. Like that's just a thing. It's like his job or something.
Yeah.
Right. When that isn't that at all.
Right.
Right. Right. And anything you look up, like it is, that's kind of how it's conveyed.
Hmm.
And it's because nobody has seen it, the story is kind of evolved.
Right. People are just making guesses about like what the intentions were and what the story is. Because they've just heard stories about like the overall kind of plot and like what, but yeah, you like no one's seen it. So like, who the hell knows?
Yeah. Because nothing about the content of the film is what's keeping it from coming out, which I think is kind of interesting. Cause like, it's a tricky subject matter to navigate and to make a film about. Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that none of the problems it's having about being released has anything to do with what the movie is about.
Yeah.
It's right.
Everything legal from the writing, from paying and it's all that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like no one saw it and went, it's so offensive. We need to like get rid of, not show this movie ever.
Kind of, but we'll get to that.
Oh.
Okay. In 1992, Spy Magazine interviewed 8 people who had actually seen the film or some form of it.
Right.
It included the original 2 writers, O'Brien and Denton, and of all people, Harry Shearer.
Really?
Okay.
From The Simpsons.
From The Simpsons,
right?
Yeah. Mr. Burns.
Some say Lewis screened it for them. Others were shown a bootleg version of it.
Wait, but I thought that they didn't ever edit it.
I know. This is where the things are like vague. Like, because I don't understand. Because based off of what Lewis said, they were holding on to all the film stuff, and he had all the last like 3 reels.
Right.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, it's like, did he just show them some of like the scenes that were shot?
Yeah,
or like, did someone edit it at some point?
Yeah, and he said, I saw a rough cut of it, and he's like, I never watched it ever again. But from these stories, it sounds like they were saying that Lewis sat them down and was like, what do you think of my movie?
So it was Jerry Lewis, the 2 writers.
And just a bunch of other
writers. Harry Shearer, for some reason.
Gotcha, okay, yeah. Harry Shearer.
So there's mentions of random issues like Lewis wearing brand new shoes in a scene that is meant to be months in the prison, in the camp, or the camp seemingly being underpopulated because of a lack of budget, and like the Nazis are being like comically evil. So there's the kind of mentioning that like maybe this movie is not like that great.
Mm.
Like that there's just some lack of attention to detail.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And
who was directing this?
Him.
Okay.
Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't mention that, did I?
That's why I was wondering, because I just realized, I'm like, wait, you talked about the writers, you talked about the producer who was just like, bye, and like, fucked off.
I mean, I guess, yeah, you're right. That's my fault, but because Jerry Lewis always directed his own stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't put that together. Okay, yeah. So he was directing it.
Yes.
And also acting in it. Okay.
With that kind of...
No, that's just my emotion about it.
Yeah. Okay, so all these people say that the main problem of the film is that Lewis isn't capable of pulling off that level of poignancy required for such a dramatic film. So, like, because he's pushing where he's never gone to.
The Nutty Professor, you don't say. Say.
He didn't make a movie called The Stoic Professor.
So, Harry Shearer is the only, like, celebrity who has seen it.
Okay.
And he is often interviewed about it, including that documentary.
That is so interesting.
Is he like, stop fucking asking me about this movie?
No, he really likes talking about it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
His opinion of the film, rightly or wrongly, has collectively shaped what outsiders think the movie actually is and the quality of it.
Okay.
Because he's the one that continues to talk about it. But there's only one guy that's talking about it.
Right. I hope I'm never in that position.
This is Harry Shearer.
This movie is so drastically wrong. Its pathos and its comedy are so wildly misplaced that you could not, in your fantasy of what it might be like, improve on what it really is. Oh my God. That's all you can say.
I'm inclined to believe Harry, though, and for this one. That feels like probably what it is.
All right, Jimmy. I mean,
it's an interesting idea to try, and especially for the time that it was.
Yeah.
But again, it's Jerry Lewis, who had never done anything dramatic before, who you would think who has had so much experience in filmmaking that he would have made sure that all of his ducks were in a row, that people would have gotten paid, and when they weren't, they would have stopped and said, okay, let's figure this out. I don't know. Maybe that's not how movies are made. I don't know. Maybe like it's just balls rolling. Let's keep going with it. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like this was made outside of the usual Hollywood system, so there wasn't a lot of that stuff in place.
Completely independent, yeah.
Right. And so he's just like – so he was trying to keep it going by just – paying out of his own pocket for everyone's salaries and shit, but it's like you can't, like, there comes a point where you just can't keep something like that afloat, you know?
Didn't O'Brien, why weren't they like, hey, you're into production, I never got paid, and out of that $2 million, couldn't he have been like, oh, I'm sorry, here, check?
Who knows?
Well, we can't ask him. Maybe
because he was just like, fuck it, I own it, I'm Jerry Lewis. Maybe
yeah,
you know, I have no idea. Speaking of original screenwriter, this is Joan O'Brien, who has seen it.
It was a disaster. Just talking about it makes me very emotional.
Oh, man. So her original idea that Jerry Lewis changed and rewrote was the synopsis that you told us, right? Or was that the Jerry Lewis version?
The version I typed out, that is the Jerry Lewis version.
Okay.
But it's not much different.
Okay. Okay.
It's
He just made the character a little more likable and like added some more kind of humor into it. Like,
That's right.
Like plot wise, it's the exact same thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now this is Joshua White. He was a director on a couple of Jerry Lewis's telethons, and he saw a bootlegged version of it.
Okay.
He'd just gotten off Percodan, and he was very proud of that. Then to see this film that was so important to him and that was almost incompetent was just sad. He felt the world had conspired against him to prevent him from completing it. He endowed it with great sadness. But it is so awful, you can't even laugh at it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe it was because he was high.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't very good.
But I also just feel like if you take all of the individual pieces of this that we've heard so far, and, like, listen, I know no one's read this, no one's seen it, so, like, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but it's like you have a PR agent and a film critic writing a Holocaust movie starring a clown that's played by Jerry Lewis and directed by Jerry Lewis, and the producer just fucked off. Like, all of that is just like, of course this movie was bad. What are you talking about?
Yeah, none of the ducks aligned. Like, and it may be because it was entirely because Washburger just completely swindled them.
Right.
Yeah.
I think after however many episodes that we've done, right, and all these movies we talked about that as a shit show, I just feel like this one is probably just like the defining movie of a shit show. This and Empires of the Deep. So it's kind of serendipitous. Or it was very, very smart on your end just to go on the same vein of movies not released. But like, yeah, exactly. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. And like, with him, and like you said, he, like being high on set, like he probably is thinking this is the greatest thing that he has ever made and that his eyes are just glowing with God's grandeur. I don't know. And then he makes it. And then it's just like you finally see, like when you come down from like a high, or you come down from like, you know, being a little bit inebriated, and you think, oh man, that was such a funny night. I was so funny. And then if you look back at footage of that night, you're like, I was not funny. I was an idiot.
I don't think it's that bad, but we'll get to that.
What's not that bad?
The movie.
The film.
Okay.
Lastly, Jerry Lewis's son, Chris, says, I can't say I remember it being really great.
Okay.
So, okay.
Very, very political answer.
At the end of the piece in Spy magazine, they mentioned that different producers are trying to make the film again, but as it was originally written.
Like not with any of Lewis's footage? Like,
yeah, just
like
start over.
Okay.
And how recent was that article?
That was 92.
Okay.
All right.
20 years after he started it.
So I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
In 2004, Joan O'Brien died, never giving Lewis the rights for the script.
And like it never got, I thought we were going to get back to the court. Like nothing happened. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. That's where it gets vague because I don't know if there's any closure to some of this stuff.
Like they never settled. There was no judgment or anything.
Yeah, like I have no idea.
Weird. That's crazy because we at least got some like closure to Barth Watch. But I mean, this is like even longer.
But yeah, it could be a thing where she just like was, no, I'm never giving you the rights.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll give you $12 million, whatever. And he's like, no, never. Hmm. That kind of thing. Who knows? In 2009, Lewis was asked about the legend and the rumors that grew around the film.
I think it's like bad advertising. For it to become what it has become seems unfair. Unfair to the project, unfair to all my good intentions, unfair to anyone that you will sit down and have them see what you're proclaiming is a finished work. It ain't finished.
Yeah. Mm. In 2012, Lewis sat down for the documentary Der Clown to discuss it. He says, given the chance, he would do it again.
Oh.
He says, not a day goes by when he doesn't think about it.
Wow.
When asked about why he doesn't like talking about it or why he buried it, he says, who goes around telling people they lost the lottery? He also says that he was ashamed of it.
Mm.
This is Jerry Lewis.
Why? It was not good work. It was bad work. On the part of the writer, the director, the actor, the producer, none of this work was any good.
And he's all of those.
Wait, so he kind of changed. It sounded like he kind of changed his tune where he was just like, he's like, it was so good. And like, they just like conspired against me. And like, it was going to be my opus. And then he's just like, no, it was bad. Like, it
yeah,
was
maybe
not good.
But with clear vision, he started looking at it going, what did I do?
Yeah. So right? He doesn't. Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show what kind of drugs are really good for creativity. I mean, just like, look at the Beatles.
And definitely not Percodan, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
In that documentary, he actually does talk about how he's not even talked to his like children about making.
Really? Wow. You know, it's interesting because like I had no idea about this. And while I was watching The Nutty Professor, I admittedly like got on Wikipedia and looked at Jerry Lewis stuff. Mm-hmm. And like none of that came up at all. At least not that I saw. The only thing that I saw is that he just didn't think women were funny. That was the main thing that I saw.
And he has some, scandals noted.
Scandal noted. I also would never have guessed that from watching The Nutty Professor.
In 2013, he spoke twice publicly about the movie, saying that he had just lost the magic and was embarrassed by the movie he had made.
Hmm.
Are we going to ever going to get to see The Day the Clown Cried?
No. No. You want to know why?
Yeah. Yes.
Simply because it's very easy to sit in front of an audience and expound on your feelings. It's another thing to have to deal with those feelings. And in terms of that film, I was embarrassed. I was ashamed of the work, and I was grateful that I had the power to contain it all and never let anybody see it. It was bad, bad, bad. It could have been wonderful, but I slipped up. I didn't quite get it. And I didn't quite have enough sense to find out why I'm doing it, and maybe there would be an answer.
That's a little bit sad. Like, he obviously cared a lot about this movie and, like, wanted it to be good, and he's just like, it was not. And maybe he needed the distance of those years to look back and go, oh, this isn't good.
I was not God's gift to filmmaking.
Well, and it's probably at the same time, too, like, with such sensitive
subject matter,
thank you. Like, you have to get that right.
Ooh,
yeah.
You really
right?
do.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so, so careful. And it sounds like with everything going on, there's no way that it was treated properly. I don't know. I just, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, all those individual little, like, pieces that you were saying, and the fact that, like, no one was getting paid, and, like, he was having to pay people, and, like, he rewrote parts of it to, like, be more funny. It's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And whether or not his heart was in it while he was on painkillers.
Yeah.
Right.
In 2015, Lewis handed his archival collection to the Library of Congress, including The Day the Clown Cried. But apparently, only 90 minutes, unedited, without sound. And they were given direct instructions that the movie could not be shown to the public until June of 2024.
What? We gotta be relevant for that.
Oh my God, keep listening to this podcast until next June. That's not that long. We can be relevant for, like, what, 7 more months?
Yeah, we got this.
Just go to patreon.com. Yeah.
The documentary Der Clown came out in 2016. It's all in German.
No.
And has a lot of footage from the movie.
How?
And because he apparently gave them the rights to it.
Like, okay.
Because he's interviewed throughout the whole documentary. And then there's, like, this modern black box theater, like, performance that's, like, to fill in the blanks.
Weird.
So, like, it'll be, like, footage of them, and then it's just, like, this really, like, modern looking thing.
Where documentarians trying to find B-roll to fill the time.
Yeah.
Those, God bless them.
This documentary has also been seemingly buried.
Whoa.
What?
Like, you cannot find it.
How do you know all this?
So,
what are your sources?
2015,
he downloaded
someone
the internet.
Compiled 30 minutes of known footage and put it on YouTube, and it was quickly taken down. It was most likely footage from that
The documentary.
All right, so this is where this is all going to bite me in the ass for lying to you guys. Currently, there is a version from 1 year ago that has about 20 minutes of footage with no subtitles, no sound. It contains all the important plot beats, including the ending. Okay.
Okay.
So when were we supposed to record this podcast?
Like, maybe 2 weeks ago was when we were originally supposed to record.
Yeah. That's when I was, like, just coming out of COVID-ness. Okay.
So this video existed on YouTube for a year.
And it's gone. Oh my God. When?
Within the last week.
What?
No.
Oh my God. I should have downloaded it.
Oh.
I fucking should have downloaded it. I have timestamps that point out all the beats of the plot, like showing what happens in each scene, and it shows the ending.
But who still cares enough about this to be taking these videos
I know,
down?
Right?
Like, who's, like, scrubbing the internet going, like...
No. Like, Jerry Lewis's estate is like, no.
Look, I'm Jerry Lewis's estate manager, and he said no one should see this movie until June of 2024. And God damn it, I'm doing my job.
Well, no, don't blame yourself, right? Blame the city of L.A. for giving me COVID. Because that's what...
Fuck you, L.A. Yeah.
No, I mean, I blame you.
Okay. Okay, so when we started this, I was like, damn it. And you were like, what's wrong? And I said, don't worry about it. And I was sitting there frantically looking through YouTube to see if someone else uploaded this shit.
The video?
And I can't show it to you. So I just pulled up a random one that I could find, Den of Geek, and this has some behind the scenes. So this is like his opening when he's playing the clown. This is in the documentary The Last Laugh. It's this little bit This is like the only footage that apparently still exists.
Wait, is that there's Jerry Lewis? Jerry was that Jerry Lewis there?
Yeah. Yes, this is Jerry Lewis. So this is the beginning of the movie.
So this is all footage from The Last Laugh.
Oh, this is the footage. This has the footage.
Ah.
So it's like I hear him entertaining the kids and then getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like how they're kind of walking a little.
Yeah.
This is the end of the movie. Holy shit, this is on here. Okay. All right. This is the end of the movie.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell from the footage. It already kind of feels like it's like, yeah, I could see why this would be not good.
So.
But.
Fuck. God. I was going to show you guys. I had all the things. There was a bar scene where that's where he gets in trouble. He's really drunk and that's where he gets in trouble. When he's entertaining the children. Like here's a whole bit where he's like putting sticks in his mouth and acting like a walrus. The scene of him loading onto the train, the offer when he's like being told by the Nazis to do this. And so the last moments, and then you see the scene where he walks with the kids to the gas chambers because they don't know what's going on. Based off of the silence version of it, because there's no audio,
right?
I'm like, this isn't that bad.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know what the whole thing is. Maybe it's kind of drawn out. Maybe it's like, maybe it was where his, like, he looks like he's acting really well, but then we hear his actual voice, it's shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there watching this going, this isn't as bad as people have made it.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like, it's hard to tell from the footage because it didn't look like it was trying to be overly goofy in those moments. But yeah, you just.
Yeah.
But like, you don't know. Like, you don't have know.
Maybe
to
there's
see
parts
the
where he is
together.
Like, maybe he can't turn off the Nutty Professor-ness and it just like, took away from
right? Kind of like, kind of like how Jim Carrey. When he would start doing serious roles, it was kind of like he couldn't turn off that kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, he's proven himself since, but like, there's times where he just like he has that Jim Carrey-ness.
Yeah.
And
he's
just like, you know, you need more a little more pathos.
Right.
Than that.
So, but you watched that 20 minutes before it was mysteriously scrubbed from the internet.
Yes.
Okay.
He thinks. But there, so I mean, there's like I said, there's pictures all over the place.
Yeah,
with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just from like the look of it, like I feel like this movie could be made, but again, if done smart.
Yeah. So I mean, like when you see a picture like this, where he has his nose in a barbed wire fence, like is this continues that idea that this movie. It's just
a comedy.
A silly comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Jerry Lewis died August 20th, 2017, at the age of 91.
Dude was hella old.
That's so. Yeah, I was like, that's so.
Grapefruit diet, baby.
Right. When you were saying Percodan, apparently.
yeah, just going back and forth.
No, when you were saying that he was like talking about this movie in 2013, I was like, that was only 10 years ago. Shit.
Yeah. Was it worth it?
I mean, what?
I mean, can we say?
No. I don't think we can say, but I'm also like maybe going to just say no because it feels like it was a lot of trouble. Like he spent a lot of money on it. People didn't get paid. Like poor Joan O'Brien, like didn't get her money for her screenplay ever.
Yeah.
And it seems like it probably wasn't that good of a movie. Like if like four or five people who, no matter what the intentions were, of everybody involved, if the four or five only people who have seen it were like, ooh, yeah, it's not good. It's like, yes, okay, then it's probably not good. So I'm gonna go ahead and say no, having never seen or heard of this movie ever in my whole life.
Yeah, I agree. It's not worth it. After what now, 50 years, 50 plus years, and it's still just kind of like this weird, nebulous, sad thing. Like, definitely not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel for the guy, like, to, like, be so passionate about something just to see it, like, crumble. And then in hindsight, know, like, oh, yeah, that was not good. This thing that I really loved and was really passionate about was not good.
Like, yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but, like, maybe we have. Listeners will let us know. But, like, the idea of what's worse. Someone taking your work and failing at it, or you failing at your own work. Speaking from an existential question.
Speaking as a professional failure.
Yes. I have a lot of experience in this.
Please tell us about failing.
Failing at your own thing that you're super passionate about is worse than someone taking your thing and failing at it. Because
you only have one person to blame.
Exactly. But yourself. Yeah. Exactly. So I think they're bad in different ways because, yeah, like if you fail at your own thing, yes, you only have yourself to blame. But if someone else fails at your thing, I feel like you're going to have more like resentment and more because you're just going to be like, well, if I had just done that, I would have done it. I would have crushed it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bit of hope in there.
It's kind of like this Schrodinger's box situation where you're just like, you'll never actually know if you could have done a better job or whatever. You know what I mean? Whereas like if you do your own thing and you fail and you're like, well, shit, you know, and like I think it's maybe easier to come to terms with that. I don't know. As an also professional failure, it is easier, I think, though, to have someone else to blame. Just be like, well, that motherfucker ruined my thing, son of a bitch. You know, like,
yeah.
That's like, yeah, it's like easier to blame someone else.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, maybe, you might have that chip on your shoulder, but at the same time, you can't, you know, there's no way that you can be like, well, I failed. Like, no, like I did.
Yeah.
My idea was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's true. As a professional, successful person, I can't identify with what you guys are talking about. I've just done so well.
Yeah, it does not compute, does it?
Oh, his failure algorithm has failed. Now what?
I don't know. He found a bypass.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you were going to have if you were going to make this story work, you had to be firing on all cylinders. And not be struggling with money, struggling with painkillers,
lawsuits and
your own hubris. Like, yeah.
That kind of stuff is okay for a movie like Empires of the Deep, where it's just like, it's a ridiculous fantasy movie about like a fish man who's also a prince or whatever the fuck that movie's about, you know? But like this movie, it's like, no, like this is deadly serious. Like you gotta like you said, be firing on all cylinders and have your shit together to attempt something like this.
And so it is kind of that quote of him saying, I came to realization how bad it was. And I'm so grateful that I had the ability to contain it.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty crazy.
I know. I love that. Like, what? No, he said something like the power or something like that. Yeah, like, he was like, the power to contain it. Like, it was like this, crazy, uncontainable thing. And he's like, but I'm fucking Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Because
he probably was like, squash, squash, squash.
Yeah.
It's still happening. It's the ghost of Jerry Lewis.
Yep.
Taking that shit off of YouTube. I feel like this is one of those stories that it's a fun, like, urban legend. Like, the mystery of, like, what happened to the footage? And wait, was it edited? And who did that? And the fact that it's, like, it was on YouTube and then it wasn't on YouTube. And they made a documentary and now no one can watch that documentary. Like, those kinds of things, sort of like the myth that's built up around it. That kind of stuff is fun and interesting.
Are we not positive that Jerry Lewis wasn't part of the Illuminati?
Maybe. I mean, it's big Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Big Lewis.
That's it.
He was a member of Big Lewis. But this, it's not as fun to talk about as like Empires of the Deep, because again, like Empires of the Deep just
it's nonsense.
Yeah. And so it's more fun to just talk about the fact that like this movie failed and never came out and like listen to all this crazy shit that happened. But like this one's almost, there's like a little bit of like sadness to it.
Yeah. Because, like I said, this was going to be kind of heavy. I mean, like that clip, you feel for him failing so hard.
Right. So it's like interesting, but not like
fun.
Not as fun to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel for you, Jerry. We're brothers in failure.
So I wanted to bookend both of this episode because it was kind of a heavy topic. I wanted to bookend with some humor. And so beginning, I threw you guys through a ruse. But at the end here, we're going to do a side shit show.
Side shit show.
Someone submit a jingle.
A jingle,
that.
Yeah.
Guys, we need jingles. Otherwise, you're just going to keep hearing this shit every episode.
Side shit show.
In 1997, a young upcoming comic by the name of Patton Oswalt gets his hands on a copy of the screenplay.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
The Day the Clown Cried. Being a film nerd and film historian and finding the mere concept hysterical, Oswald began performing live readings in LA.
Oh my God.
He performed this with David Cross, Bob Odenkirk, Paul F. Tompkins, Brian Posen, Laura Milligan, Scott Aukerman, Dave Foley, and Toby Huss as Jerry Lewis, the clown. Toby Huss, when you see him, you'd recognize him. One of my favorite things he did was he was the weird electrician on Down Periscope.
Ian, nobody knows what the fuck you're talking about. Please give us a more relevant... Yeah, everybody knows from Down Periscope.
Fucking
you know,
Down Periscope? Movie's funny.
Ian, nobody knows this movie.
Kelsey Grammer?
No, you son of a bitch. Give us a more relevant movie.
Kelsey. I didn't know you guys would
Jesus Christ.
Throw me under the bus for that one.
No, that's so...
Okay, hold on. I'm going to give you guys a more relevant thing here.
What, Toby Huss?
Yeah, let me see.
He mostly does, like, he does side bits on television.
He played Weird Al's dad in Weird, the Al Yankovic Story.
Okay, there you go. That's pretty recent.
Okay.
Okay, when Huss wasn't there, it was Jay Johnston. Anybody know who that is?
No. Was he also in Down Periscope?
He was one of my favorite things that he did. He was one of the cops in Arrested Development. He was also the voice of Jimmy Pesto. Because he was caught January 6th.
Yep.
Ooh.
Okay. This was a free event that was word of mouth only. But it grew enough that a newspaper reached out and Oswald gleefully told them the details. Their next show, Oswald is served a cease and desist as he enters the theater.
Oh my God.
So as this audience starts arriving, Oswald sits with the rest of the cast reading over the letter, freaking out a little bit. Is this going to put the theater in itself, like theater itself in jeopardy? Was Jerry Lewis still that powerful? Apparently still is.
The ghost of Jerry Lewis.
Then Oswald is told someone is here to see him. This is from Patton Oswald's memoir, Silver Screen Fiend. I was confronted by the single douchiest looking adult male I'd ever seen. All the worst aspects of 1, a jock, 2, a shrill NPR listener, 3, a wannabe alpha male, and 4, a movie producer, which it turned out he was. So the man starts yelling about how he had to leave his Malibu home to come stop some C-list actors from performing a script he was currently optioning. So, quote from the book end. Do you have any idea what Jerry Lewis did to this script when he got his hands on it? Any fucking idea? It's an important story and it needs to be told the way it was originally written, and I've got Chevy Chase interested in it, and you have no fucking right.
Whoa.
Chevy Chase?
Oswald fights back laughing in his face because he's like, Chevy Chase?
In this economy?
As he says, Chevy Chase in clown makeup in Auschwitz? I wanted more than anything in the world to see that film. If shutting down my reading could do anything toward helping that become a reality, I felt it was my cosmic duty to man up and disappoint my audience.
Oh my God.
So he promises the guy he will never do this again. Like, mm-hmm. But then tells the cast the story and they're like, well, shit.
So then they had to do improv?
Yes. As Oswald writes,
oh no, really?
The lights went down and I stepped out on stage with the cease and desist letter in my hand. I explained to the audience what had happened, boos, groans, and then piece by piece we all improvised an evening around the fact that we'd been canceled. Bob and David improvised their interpretation of exactly what happened when the producer found out that the reading in LA Weekly. How the fuck will anyone go see our movie in Kansas if 8 people watch a script reading for free in Santa Monica? Chevy Chase was born to play a clown who leads children into a gas oven.
Oh, man.
Jesus Christ.
Paul F. Tompkins did a flawless phone call between the producer of the film and Peter O'Toole, trying to snake the role of the clown away from Jerry Lewis. Toby Huss played a concerned white supremacist who took issue with the screenplay's negative depiction of the Third Reich. And then everyone did a massive free-form, back-and-forth, interpretive dance pantomime musical version of the screenplay. Sloppy, hilarious, and impossible to sue. What else could you ask for in an evening of theater?
Oh my God, that sounds fucking great.
I would give anything.
You got a portal gun.
Go.
Here we go.
When you come back, guys, it was so good.
I can die happy. I can. The minute you said they had to improvise, like, that's, of course, is very important and very, you know, very important to me, right? But with just the simple cast that you said and everything that you were saying about what they did, I would give anything to have seen this.
Seen that, right?
Would've, oh my God.
So good.
Bob Odenkirk and David Cross.
Yeah.
Like doing a retelling, basically playing a game of day in the life of a scene that just barely happened. Oh my God, that would have been hilarious to see.
I really wish that producer stayed to watch what they did.
So
just watch them just tear his ass apart on stage.
Do we know who that producer was?
No.
I came down from my Malibu home. Oh, fuck,
I had to come all the way down here to East Los Angeles.
This is how Oswald wraps up that story. I stayed true to the promise I gave to Soy Spasm, the producer. I never once did another reading of The Day the Clown Cried in Los Angeles. Every other reading I did was in New York. If it makes him feel any better, I tried my best to avoid any C-list entertainers. I hope he considers Stephen Colbert, Will Arnett, and Fred Willard at least B-list. I mean, they're no Chevy Chase.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
What year was this again? 2000?
That was 97.
That was back in 97?
97?
Yeah.
Wow.
So then he kept doing that.
Oswald was like nobody at this point.
So then he kept doing those readings in New York, though. And, like, apparently that motherfucker never did anything with that script.
Yeah, because he just didn't heard about it.
Because I haven't heard of that Chevy Chase movie.
the redone version with him?
Wow.
Yeah.
But how did he get his hands on the script?
I mean, like I said, it's been online for years. Like,
okay, but the real one, the pre-whatever.
No, the Jerry Lewis version.
Oh, the Jerry Lewis version, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's what he was. That's another part of this multi-part thing of what this producer was upset about is because they were not only doing the script, but Jerry Lewis.
The bad version of
it. They were in the bad version of it. Okay.
So maybe whoever the fuck pulled that video down is a producer who's still trying to make this
fucking movie.
Who's still
trying to option.
Yeah, whatever.
He's holed up in his Malibu home just being like, I will find every piece.
Just Googles Day of the Earth, the Clown Cried every day.
No. They've got a Google alert and an assistant to do that stuff for them.
So fucking angry. Dude, that thing had like 100,000 views on it. It was a year ago. Whatever.
The ghost of Jerry Lewis.
Son of a bitch.
I like to think that it's good old Jerry.
If we say Glavin three times into a mirror, will he appear?
Oh my God.
No. Hank Azaria will.
That's preferable.
What?
That's preferable, actually.
I'm not Harry Shearer.
No way.
That's it? That's the ending?
Yeah, that's the end.
All right.
Final thoughts?
Pray to the ghost of Jerry Lewis for us, that we will all
Yeah, this
not
episode actually
anymore.
Gets comes out.
Oh, my God. Can you
imagine?
Oh, God,
is it recording? Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we have to release, like, a mini episode that's like, you guys, holy shit, the tapes were wiped!
Right. Yeah, some Hollywood Malibu producer contacted us out of nowhere.
Wait, is that someone knocking at the door? But we better go get it. It might be that Hollywood producer telling us to cease and desist.
Yep.
Dude, that would be so fucking scary if we opened this and I, like, went to edit the episode and just, like,
corrupted.
All... Yeah, it's like just this episode or something.
Just white noise.
But then we would have to... No! I
hate
it.
Oh, that would be so fucking cool.
But then we'd have to do an episode...
Helmet in dark.
But then we'd have to pull a patent and do an episode about us doing this episode. And then...
Yeah, oh, that would be amazing.
Amazing.
Ian, you want to do improv with me?
Fuck off!
God, stop asking!
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Use ACAST's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.